Chapter 23. The way my gorgeous catwife nibbled on my earlobe like that caused a trail of fire to burn its way through my blood and travel straight to my now fully interested cock.
"Fuck, Zoe," I moaned,
and then flexed my hips when I felt Shay's fingers tug at the waistband of my loincloth.
"That's a brilliant idea,"
Shay murmured, and proceeded to untie the ceremonial dagger and the string keeping my loincloth on. She then wrapped her hot hand around my stiff dick, and I hissed with pleasure.
"That's it, dear heart. Kiss me, my love,"
Zoe breathed, and I did so with urgency as Shay continued to stroke me leisurely. A moment later, the catwoman broke away when she was good and aroused, and she dipped her head to rest in the crook of my shoulder. While my catwife was catching her breath, I turned my attention to Shay's lovely mouth. Then I stilled her hand and flipped our positions, so she was now on her back with me over her, while Zoe cuddled up next to her.
Alex!
Shay stuttered out as I smoothed my palms down her silky thighs. I nearly groaned again at the emergence of her little stutter, and suddenly, some type of howling primitive urge came over me. Right then, I had to see just how incoherent I could make her in order to satisfy the reptile part of my brain. Like a man possessed, I parted her petite legs, paused for a moment to admire the pretty red curls and the glimmer of wetness on her pussy lips, and then dove down to lap at her slit. Shay's resulting scream was muffled by Zoe's mouth as the catwoman suckled and tongued her way seductively past the other woman's heart-shaped lips. I grinned internally as I swirled my own tongue around that little engorged nub, and the fingers of my right hand held her lips open even wider as my left two fingers stroked their way into her silky hole. Shay tore her mouth away from Zoe's when she couldn't handle the pleasure. Her hand scrambled for mine, and her grip around my wrist made me still. I knew she was right on the edge, so I pulled away.
"Shay, sweetheart," I groaned,
and she thrashed her head back and forth.
"I need to be inside you."
"Yes,"
she gasped, and she tried to pull me on top of her as quickly as she could.
"Goddess,"
I said, as I positioned my dripping prick at the entrance of her pussy and slowly slid home.
"Oh, you feel so good, baby."
"Mama, my, oh, Mercedes, move,"
she stuttered, and my hips got to work at once, at a pace that was both fast and hard the way we both needed it. Her pussy walls tightened and spasmed around me as her climax started, and I scooped an arm under her lower back and brought her pelvis flush to mine so I could grind my cock hard into her G-spot.
"You're both so beautiful,"
Zoe breathed as she lounged on her side, and one of her hands was idly stroking herself between her thighs as she watched the Phoenix woman come undone beneath me.
"I love watching you make love together."
"Oh, fuck,"
I hissed, and I tried to think of complex math equations so I could back off the edge of my own orgasm as Shay continued to pulsate around my hard cock.
"Oh, Alex, oh!"
She whimpered and jolted, and I gently laid her back down with my cock still inside her.
"Zoe! Oh, Zoe! Come here, my love!"
With one hand, Shay gripped the back of the catwoman's head and drew her in for a passionate kiss. By mutual agreement, I carefully pulled out of Shay and was wife-handled onto my back so Zoe could have her furious, lust-filled way with me.
"God, kitten!"
I gasped, and arched up the minute her pussy lips enveloped my head. And the result had our hips slamming together as I seated myself to the hilt in one go.
"Oh, oh, oh!"
Zoe panted as she immediately started grinding on top of me at a fast pace that had my toes curling and my fingers clamping onto her tender hips. The ability to form words deserted me, and I dug my heels into the blanketed floor so I could meet her thrust for thrust as she started to bounce. At the rate at which I was jackrabbiting into her, it wasn't a surprise when her orgasm rolled through her a short time later, and I felt a hot gush flow down my ball sack when she came. God damn, that was intense. But I held on to my climax tooth and nail as Zoe bent forward. I caught her against me and slowed my clip to a gentle rocking sensation as my catwife trembled through her pleasure.
"Keep going,"
Shay said in a husky voice, which was as hot as it was demanding. And Zoe and I were helplessly at her command. When the Phoenix woman was satisfied with the deep thrusts I was achieving, She climbed over my lap behind the Catwoman and rode the gyrating wave we were on as she rubbed Zoe's lower back.
That's it. One more, darling. You're so pretty when you take your pleasure.
Shay's honeyed words dripped over both of us, and our bodies shuddered in sync. Trust the Phoenix Woman to make us both come again with just her smoky voice when she took control. Zoe and I took cues from her as one hand disappeared between her thighs, and she continued to guide the Catwoman's lazy grind into something that gradually picked up in pace again.
Fuck!
I groaned deep in my chest when the dark-haired beauty on top of me sat up so she could arch against Shay's front.
Yes! Alex! Oh!
Shay whimpered and then bit the side of Zoe's neck. This little gesture was all it took to set off a chain reaction so amazing I couldn't have coordinated it even if I tried. Somehow the sharp nip against my catwife's creamy throat was all it took to set her off, and she slammed down on my cock as she came for the second time. The powerful ripple of her inner muscles had my orgasm punching out of me like a fucking stallion, and I jerked my hips up as hard as I could with the combined weight on my lap as I ejaculated deep inside her. Zoe's climax was still rolling through her even when mine began to ebb, and Shay fucked herself with her own hand until her second orgasm shuddered out of her, and I felt my dick spurt another shot of cum at how the two gorgeous women took what they wanted. I smiled as the feel-good chemicals lit up my brain, and I gently disengaged all three of us so I could get up and attend to both my amazing wives. Usually, after some mind-melting sex, I would be out for the count. But the opposite seemed to take place within me, and I understood why it was called the replenishing, because I felt as if I could do a triathlon backwards, twice. Instead, I busied myself with finding a clean cloth and some water from the tray of victuals we didn't really touch, and I hastily wiped myself down before coming back over to the nest of blankets and pillows. Shay and Zoe had collapsed against each other in a naked pile of tangled limbs and dripping cum. They still were both panting slightly, and both of them had a beautiful sheen of sweat glistening under the bluish light of the lantern. Surprisingly, the body paint on all of us must have set in our skin enough to stain, because despite our lovemaking and the damp strokes of the cloth, the symbols remained mostly intact.
That was amazing, you two, I commented after I finished making my wives more comfortable.
They cuddled facing each other like each end of a parenthesis, and they beckoned me closer so I could lay between them.
You had better come back to us, husband,
Zoe murmured as her arms wrapped around me from behind. I will, I promise, I said, and I arched into her soft body behind me before I pulled Shay's smaller form against my chest.
No getting horribly maimed either,
the Phoenix Woman added in her sleepy mumble.
Or else we will be horribly cross.
Will you now? I chuckled and kissed the top of her head. She didn't respond, and when I glanced over my shoulder, I saw Zoe had dropped off to sleep as well. With another silent laugh, I snuggled down between them, and despite my energized state, I slipped off into a light doze. When I woke up next, it wasn't really for any reason other than the fact I felt inexplicably urged to rouse from my partial slumber. The silence of the world outside the tent let me know the festivities had long passed, but the urge to leave the safety of this cocoon caused me to quietly climb out of the little love nest my wives had created for us, throw on my loincloth and the dagger, and wander out into the center of the village. Leader Zaire was there with Thass next to the remains of the bonfire that was still smoldering low and orange in the dim bioluminescence the local flora cast around in the darkness of the night.
Brightwood, Zaire greeted me with a hand on my shoulder. You look much improved. Are you ready to disembark on the trial of the body?
I am, I said solemnly.
Come, Thass said. I will take you to the demon spine.
I nodded and let the large man lead the way as the strange energy from before started to thrum through my veins. There was no talking between Thass and me, but it wasn't an uneasy silence, and I followed the man exactly like that until he brought me to a narrow plateau overlooking the neon village below.
You see this ledge here?
The bald man pointed just over the plateau's edge at a small ridge of rock that seemed to extend the length, if not the entire radius, of the mountainous ledge like a belt. The one below the lone line of chain bolted into the rock wall? I asked, as I gestured to the chain in question.
That is the rail, he deadpanned,
and I wasn't sure if we were still being facetious or not, so I waited for him to continue.
The first task is to walk the Coward's Folly until you get to the Reach. From there, you will carry on to Golden Peak. The last obstacle after that is to find your way to Snake Tree. And don't forget, don your hands with the ability to catch the wind.
With that epic but succinct speech, the Terran man saluted me with a sturdy thump over his heart and a grave nod as I carefully lowered myself onto the ledge. When Thass disappeared from my sight, I took a well-earned moment to gather myself and make sure I had the proper footing. The ledge I was standing on was only about a foot wide, which was plenty of room for error, especially since I was wearing a pair of ceremonial sandal things like Samurai Jack. Stylish for Terrans, but iffy on traction. No biggie. I just needed to make sure not to slip and fall to my death by focusing on one step at a time. Easy. What ended up not being so easy was when the ledge, aptly named Coward's Folly, led me around the front of the plateau where a large swath of moss arched over the ledge I was scaling and made a natural tunnel. A very dark natural tunnel. "Goody," I snarked to absolutely no one, and took the time to increase the light emitting from my stone. The tunnel was long, and when I got into it, I could tell the ceiling was quite a ways away due to the fact I couldn't see any end to the darkness. As I continued to shuffle along the ledge, I noticed the sound of something crawling above me.
"Just keep walking, Alex," I told myself, even as my imagination pictured giant hairy-ass spiders or something equally terrifying and multi-legged moving around in the dark.
When I made it to about the halfway point, the skittering noises seemed to increase, and a certain type of tension stretched around me like I was suffocating inside plastic wrap until I was forced to stop. The skittering, crawling sound was almost deafening, and I chanced to glance up, which was a mistake not because of the monsters I couldn't see, but because my foot slipped and I almost plunged to my death.
"Oh, fuck!"
I hissed, and I was glad I had some sense of awareness not to shout as I clung onto the chain railing while both my feet slipped off the ledge. The rusty iron bit into my palms, and for a moment I thought I was fucked as the chain snapped so I was only holding onto the half still bolted to the rock, but then I got my footing and pulled myself to the part of the rail still intact. When I caught my breath, I felt along the ridge with one of my feet in order to confirm a suspicion I was beginning to have. The foot ledge was getting smaller, and I didn't know how much more of it I had left before it was completely eroded away. I tried not to think about that and continued on my way despite the creepy noises above me, and I ardently hoped the crazy paint on my skin was doing its job to dissuade any predators from thinking of my ass as a fucking snack. Eventually, I managed to edge my way out from under the mossy lip of the plateau and back out into the neon-luminescent pre-dawn. Sure enough, I came face to face with my biggest fear, as well as the clever reason behind the name of the task Thass had simply dubbed the Reach. On the plateau's far side, the rest of the shelf I was using as a foothold had crumbled away at some point, and with growing dread I realized what I needed to do. In order to get to the sheer cliffs, I would have to hang by the chain railing to finish traversing the Coward's Folly, and then I would have to follow the chain where it made an improvised ladder up the face of the cliff.
"Here goes nothing,"
I huffed, and I dangled myself carefully from the chain and prayed to the goddess it would hold my weight as I began to make my way across. The key was to not look down. If I could do that, I could potentially forget I was dangling hundreds of feet above a forest of sharp obsidian rock spires that would skewer me faster than a kebab at a 4th of July potluck. Again, no big deal. I just needed to harness my inner American ninja warrior and I'd be fine. But the chain was really starting to tear into my already blistered palms. My shoulders were beginning to ache, and the fucking cliff was still goddamn far away as fuck. Hand over hand, I crawled across the distance until I could finally grab the first rung of the chain ladder, which was just more of the chain railing leading up to whatever was at the top. I reached for the second rung and nearly tore my rotator cuff. Again, clever name. Bitch of a task, though.
Ah!
I couldn't help but groan as I stretched up as far as I could for the second rung. Fuck. Fucking shit fuck. This was fucking hard, and I had about 1,000 of these fuckers to navigate until I reached the top. I tried not to dwell on the seemingly impossible task ahead of me, and I set to work on balancing on the skinny rung on tiptoes and sandals without falling.
Rung after rung appeared above me in a never-ending parade that my lats and biceps were struggling to cope with. And sweat was pouring off me, especially with how the rising sun started to filter down to the lower echelon and warm the previously cold air. Another rung. Goddess, my muscles screamed, and I felt like both my shoulders were about to become dislocated, but I couldn't stop. Another rung. My palms were slick with sweat and blood. Another. Come on. Another. Finally, the last two rungs came into sight, and I eagerly stretched for the next one.
Brack!
A fucking squaller suddenly shrieked from behind me and made a snap for my shoulder.
Gah!
I yelled, and swung myself out of the way one-handed as the creature jabbed its sharp beak into the stone where half my body used to be. With my other hand, I reached for the dagger at the small of my back and slashed at the thing.
Die, bitch!
My body turned as the chain ladder twisted this way and that during my battle with the squaller, and I grimaced at the way my bare skin scraped along the mountain's edifice.
Ree! Ree!
The beast squawked, and it tried to avoid my swiping blade as it attempted to knock me loose.
Come here!
I bellowed as the fucker battered me with its large, leathery wings, and I pushed my body away as it tried to rip out my spine.
Rawk!
The squaller howled when my knife finally lodged itself into one of the beast's beady red eyes. Without waiting to see how long it would take for the sucker to recover, I resumed my task of pulling myself up the rest of this godforsaken ladder. When I finally heaved myself to the top of Golden Peak, I rolled on my back on the small rise in order to catch my breath.
Fucking dark hell, I panted.
But there was no time to waste, so I staggered my way up to my feet and looked around somewhat at a loss. For one, Golden Peak seemed to be a bit of a misnomer, because all I could see was an odd forest of gnarled trees with trunks no bigger than the thickness of my arm. What did Thass say I needed to do once I got here? I walked to the edge of the rise and glanced out over the village. The injured squaller had fled, and from this vantage point, I could see the huts and lodges, a thin ribbon of smoke from the bonfire, and further than that, to the edge of the farmlands where the natural boundary of the pit cut the village off from what laid beyond. And at the very edge of that, I could see the gnarled mass that was Snake Tree. I was almost there. The last task, make it to Snake Tree, and then I was home free. But the question was, how? I looked around and was convinced I had to be missing something obvious about this next part. There had to be a way to get over there if the whole point was to traverse the demon's spine only to end up at Snake Tree. What had Thass said to me at the end? Something weird and cloaked in esoteric meaning, no doubt. If I remembered correctly, it was something like, "Don't forget to don your hands with the wind," or something. The sun finally moved enough in the sky so the light was now starting to dawn on the rise I was standing on, and an odd groaning, creaking sound could be heard. I looked around for the origin of the sound, but I couldn't pinpoint where it was coming from. The noise sounded like it was all around me, but before I could speculate further, one of the skinny, dead trees to my left suddenly burst open like a giant yellow snapdragon. I nearly screamed in surprise, but I didn't have time when the one to my right exploded into a bloom a second later. This was apparently some kind of cue, because after the two next to me went off, the whole field popped open like a batch of Jiffy Pop. When it was all said and done, Golden Peak really did look like it was covered in gold due to all the huge flowers that opened with the dawn. Oh, Thass's clue meant dawn, not dawn, and now I needed something to, what, catch the wind? A breeze warmed from the morning sun spiraled up from the lower bowls of Tear and created an updraft that had the giant snapdragon straining upwards like they wanted to break free and fly through the air, like a kite catches the wind. I pulled my knife out and hacked at the blossom closest to me until I had my own Terran hang glider, and then I carried my prize to the edge of Golden Peak. Was I really going to jump off a mountain and trust my life to a flower and the immutable laws of physics that hopefully were consistent across this universe as well as my own? Hell yes, I was. And on the next strong gust, I took a running start so I could launch myself into the air.
Whoa!
I hollered as the updraft caught me and carried me over the village. Fuck, my palms were thrashed to shit. But the view was incredible,
and as that spooky tree came closer and closer, I could feel some of the strength start to leak out of me at the prospect of being done. When I landed about 20 feet away from the base of the hill the tree was on, my knees immediately folded as some of my stamina left me. But I wasn't done yet. I still had the trial of the mind to look forward to, and I needed all my wits about me so I wouldn't fuck up and show any fear or strong emotions that would cause my soul to be eaten. I pulled my dagger out once more as I slowly made my way to the massive trunk. The closer I got, the louder that eerie moaning of the pit could be heard until it was matching the dull ringing in my ears. Then, with the tip of the dagger poised over a knot in the trunk, I tried my best to ignore the grating sound as I pushed the tip a quarter of the way in. Silver sap-like liquid bubbled to the surface, and I moved my knife so I could wrap my lips around the knot in order to swallow some. What came next was something out of a fever dream, mainly because the first thing I noticed after drinking the sap was the fact I was suddenly standing next to the crumpled heap of my own body. "The fuck?" I muttered. But at the sight of the tree in front of me, I wiped all expression off my face. Everything looked different in this odd astral plane of existence, like I was seeing behind the curtain of reality, so to speak. Animals I'd never encountered before flew through the air, and every one of them reminded me of a fossil someone might find on the bottom of the ocean. All around there were trilobite things chasing undulating jellyfish types, while bigger astral creatures milled around like gentle giants. The snake tree was changed through the lens of this ethereal plane as well. It was moving, for one thing, and its branches seemed to reach out here and there like fingers. For what, I didn't know, and I didn't care to discover that there were more unseen things even this realm couldn't pick up on.
"Who has come to be weighed in worth?"
a voice projected from both inside and outside of my mind. "My name is Alex Brightwood," I addressed the voice and straightened my spine.
"Why have you come?"
The tree's branches and leaves hissed as they rattled with suspicion.
"You are not of Terran blood."
"No, but I wish to be accepted among them," I said.
"We shall see," the tree said,
and suddenly the scene in front of me faded as I was thrown into the dark. Immediately, the oppressive blackness made me want to panic, but I buried the feeling as I forced my mind to slow down and assess my situation. Even though I was on all fours, I couldn't discern anything other than the hard-packed ground under my shins and knees, and I debated on what to do next. The seconds stretched into minutes, and for lack of any other brilliant ideas, I decided to stand up to my feet. Then I heard an abrupt wail of deep pain I just knew was Rylan, and my initial reaction was to run in the direction of the sound calling his name at the top of my lungs. But I stayed. I stayed when the voice screaming out to me cycled through everyone I loved. Shay, Zoe, Amaya, Horace, Anwar. Mr. Jenner begging for the pain to end. Arvid's lowing bellow. Velrala and Bowden getting tortured. Mel and even Captain Nemus. Siskern and Mech. Through all of it, I steeled my spine, even though each added voice threatened to crush me where I stood with the guilt I felt at not running to their aid. I knew the voices weren't real, but the longer I stayed in the pitch blackness, the more I was starting to doubt reality altogether, and to cope with the slow breakdown of my mind, I curled up as small as possible and clamped my hands over my ears. It made no difference, and the screams of everyone I knew sliced into my heart over and over and over and over.
"Shh, young one,"
a new voice filtered through the cacophony, and suddenly the screaming stopped, and I was being lifted to my feet and placed back on the ground. Only instead of being at the base of the old tree, I was now standing in a meadow.
"Fuck, I'm sorry I showed fear. Please don't eat my soul,"
I blurted out in a panic, even though it appeared as if I was alone.
"Showing fear is not a sin," the voice said,
and I turned my head this way and that for the source.
"Running from it is. You stayed, even when I could feel it in your heart that all hope was lost. Why did you do this?"
"Because without them, nothing is worth going back for," I said simply. "So I might as well stay."
"Your answer is true," the disembodied voice intoned.
And suddenly the scenery changed, and I was standing in the middle of a large crater-made lake, as smooth as glass, and under a sky full of stars.
Second question. What is Tear to you?
Tear is... The words failed me, and instead, pictures formed in my mind's eye of all the terrifying yet wonderful things I'd experienced thus far. The mirror-like lake then acted like a screen for my mind to project onto. And all around where I stood, the beauty and awe that struck me when I first laid eyes on this island was playing out on the IMAX version of this plane of existence.
Acceptable, the voice declared.
And once again, my surroundings faded out, until I was now on the top of a snow-capped mountain as the wind tore around me with a fury.
And finally, what is so important about the stone you wear around your neck?
My stone? I touched the familiar weight against my sternum. Nothing, really.
Your status means nothing. Your power, the snake tree needled.
I didn't really earn all that in the first place, I said. It was given to me.
Through right of the duel, the voice argued. You have killed to gain your fortunes.
I only kill to defend my life and the lives of the ones I protect, I said.
A typical response of someone who lies about how much their affluence actually means to them,
it said. Not me, I countered, and firmed my jaw. Ancient tree spirit or not, it was beginning to piss me off. I could care less about Asher status unless it has to do with saving more innocents.
Prove it, the voice hissed. Surrender your stone to me for safe passage back into your body.
The scenery shimmered again until I was back at the base of Snake Tree and staring down at my unresponsive body. Other people from the village had amassed a little ways away, and I could see Zoe and Shay embracing each other while Leader Zare hovered over my prone form. My wives looked like they were crying, and they were soon joined by Horace and the Mech sisters as they pushed through the crowd to the front in order to see what was happening. When they did, all three of their faces fell. "What's happening to me?" I asked, and my own voice was starting to sound detached and far away, just like the snake tree. "Am I dying?"
You have lingered longer than any other before you, and because you are not from here, your spirit is confused,
it responded pragmatically.
If you remain here much longer, your spirit will wander on.
Without hesitation, I snapped the stone off my neck and thrust it out to whoever or whatever the invisible entity was. Here, I said. Now take me back. This means nothing. Silence greeted me in the face of this pronouncement, and nothing came along to take the Dula stone away from me. At first, I thought maybe the voice didn't hear me, but I soon realized how stupid that was when I considered how it seemed to be talking inside my head more often than not.
You are an interesting one, Alex Brightwood, traveler from Earth,
the voice finally assessed. You know me? I asked.
I do now, it said,
and it almost sounded as if there was a hint of a smile in that dispassionate tone.
Keep your stone, Asher, and know your willingness to sacrifice your wealth and power was what saved you this day.
Thank you, I replied with feeling. I won't forget.
One more thing.
The ancient spirit stopped me as I was on my way back to my physical body.
There has been a wound carved into your mind, made worse by the raw and untamed power you have inside you. It will heal badly this way, unless something is done.
Why tell me all this? I asked.
You are an interesting specimen,
the tree's voice said with a strange nonchalance.
And your heart is pure. I tell you these things so you may seek out the one who may help you. They are in the next mining town, and they go by the name Mars. Find them. Now, take my blessing and go.
With this final barked order, I felt as if I'd been slapped and plunged into ice water all at once. And when I blinked, I was suddenly on my back and looking up into the concerned face of Leader Zare.
Wood! Brightwood!
The alligator man lightly smacked my cheeks as I willed my eyes to focus.
Can you focus on me at all?
I grunted and tried to sit up, even though it felt as if I'd just been hit by a front-end loader.
He's going to be okay, folks,
Zare determined, after a preliminary screening of my person turned up with nothing to worry about. That go-ahead was all the permission my crew needed before they were rushing up the slope toward me with identical tear-filled eyes.
Alex!
Shay sobbed as she collapsed next to me on one side while Zoe and Amaya did on the other.
We thought you had succumbed!
I'm okay. Honest, I croaked as I clutched all three women tight. What happened?
We all saw you take off from Golden Peak,
Zoe responded.
We've been here waiting for you to wake up ever since.
Yeah, Chief, Horace said as the color slowly returned to his face. It is almost mid-epic. We are about to fear the worst. I'm here, I reassured them all as I squeezed my women tight. And I'm not going anywhere anytime soon.
Good answer, my lad,
Zare commented with a smile. A cheer rose up from the villagers once they knew I was officially in the clear, and I had never felt so fond of a people I'd barely gotten a chance to meet. But here I was, exhausted beyond all measure, sore and emotionally bruised, and yet I still had everything I'd ever wanted right here in my arms.
What will you do next now that you're fully Terran, Ambassador?
Thass asked. Well, first thing I'm going to need to do is take a fucking nap, I said with a grin. And then I scooted back so we were all propped against Snake Tree's trunk. Its strange warmth soaked into my back and beckoned my sore and battered body closer to rest.
Fair enough, fair enough,
the lowish leader chuckled.
Sleep, Alex,
Amaya then whispered to me as she cupped my jaw with her hand. Her eyes flashed their pretty pearlescence and her palm radiated a soothing warmth which let me know she was reading me, and I braced myself for more questions.
Those will come later, lovely. For now, you must let others take care of you. You did well, Alex. So, so well.
And as I sank into the words the Oryx woman was saying, I knew she was right. I'd made it to Tear and proven myself to both the upper and lower echelons. I'd upgraded my weapons with awesome herald cores, and the Snake Tree had deemed me worthy. The time for worrying was past, and I was surrounded on all sides by the very people I swore myself to protect, and whom I knew would protect me in turn. Everything else would come in due course. But for now, I slept. End of Book 5.